London dropped its dignity.
Yeah.
So has France and Germany.
Yeah.
All hands are dancing to a raggedy melody full of originality.
Sing it,
folks. Hello, and welcome to Yesterday's Chip Paper, the fortnightly-ish podcast where we look at the strange and the bizarre and the macabre stories from historic newspaper archives. My name is Violet.
And mine is Jim, and we are recording this the morning after St. Patrick's Day. So, I've felt better.
I stayed in this year. I couldn't face it.
I feel like whiskey got a driving license, rented a car, and just drove into me. So, yeah, in case you haven't listened before, what we do is we get together every couple of weeks and we tell each other a story that we found in old newspapers from a variety of topics, from mad scientists to murders to... What did we have last week? What was last time?
A woman, Jim. A woman.
A woman. I don't do many of those.
She did great things.
She did. She was fun.
Old Betty Taylor.
Now, mine this week, this guy is called Samuel Bissett. And the story kind of isn't about him. He had achieved a degree of fame, but he was, and this is genuinely true, he was less famous than the pig that he owned.
Okay, who is the pig? The star of Babe?
No, much better than that. Could that pig talk in Babe?
I don't know, I never watched it. Deprived childhood.
What? Isn't it? Jesus, it was like my Citizen Kane when I was a kid. So the pig is actually featured on Wikipedia and he himself isn't. And I'll get to the pig towards the end of this episode because the pig is the most famous thing about his life. It's the, you know, nothing else has a Wikipedia page. He just did a lot of wacky shit before the pig, and that wasn't ever referenced when he and the pig were business partners.
Okay, you've piqued my interest.
Yeah, and it's an old one this time as well. So the newspapers that I'm going to be reading from are all posthumous. They're either obituaries or they're writing about him 100 years later. So as with everything on this show, it comes with a disclaimer that some of this might be bullshit.
Probably quite a large proportion of it on this occasion. But hey, there's no Wikipedia to look it up quick, guys, so you're going to have to dig into those old archives or...
Yeah, you'll have to take my word for it until we get to the pig bit, which is a sentence I've never said before. So, he was born in Perth in Scotland in 1721, so this is an old one, and a lot of the references that I'll be using will be from articles written long after his death or around the time of his death. He was one of three boys. He trained as a shoemaker, and by all accounts is a very good one. He was good at what they called woman's work, which I'm assuming is a sort of more aesthetic element of the craft, but I have absolutely no idea.
Mm-hmm.
The Dundee Courier on 24th October 1882 said that as a young man, in quotes, amongst his mates and acquaintances, he was regarded as an eccentric sort of fellow, full of queer fancies and fond of pondering over curious projects. And you couldn't summarize this guy better than that.
Okay, that sounds good.
Yeah. He personified eccentricity. And he didn't want to stay in Perth. He didn't see opportunity in Perth. He moved to London when he was about 18. The dates on this one are all over the place. So I'm not including many dates. I'll just go with how old he was. And he worked as a shoemaker. He carried on working as a shoemaker. And then he did that for a while. And then he met a lady who was from a very wealthy background. And I don't know how to phrase this. I'm going to say came with a large dowry. But I think came with makes it sound like cattle.
Okay, yeah. She was rich.
Yeah, there's a large dowry attached to it. So he's free now. He doesn't have to be a shoemaker anymore because he, you know, doesn't need money. They've got money now. And he becomes a broker. And no one says what kind of broker. And it feels to me like a kind of movie job where it's just like, yeah, he's an architect.
And then
really elaborate as to exactly what that means. I know what an architect is, but specifically what kind or whatever. As a personal side note, I know a shoemaker. Got a friend of mine called Nick, who is a very good shoemaker by all accounts. Don't ever call a shoemaker a cobbler.
Are you just trying to get a free pair of shoes out of this episode? Is this what you're trying to do?
Honestly, I would have to declare it as like a taxable income. They cost so much. But don't ever make the mistake of calling a shoemaker a cobbler. They do not like it.
Is that calling them essentially a loaf of bread?
Is that what?
A cobbler is a type of bread or a bread pudding or something.
So two things.
Right?
One, a cobbler is somebody who repairs shoes and has been since maybe the 12th century.
Oh, I know, but I mean, Today. Today's street talk.
There's like, yes, street talk about desserts. Yes, there is a thing called a peach cobbler.
Okay, yeah, bam. See, I know what I'm talking about.
Just about. the very loosest hold on it. Anyway, so he's a broker now, and he actually does pretty well. And then in the 1750s, he reads, and this again dates unclear. He reads an article in a newspaper or magazine or something about a trained horse at the market at Saint. It's either Saint-Germain in France or it's Saint-Germain in Cornwall.
Okay.
Then no one's clear about it, and the spellings vary. So I did look, and I found a lot of Bissets in Cornwall. So it could be that there was a Bissett family there, and it could be that that's where it was. I don't know. He reads this article about a trained horse at this market, and he's like, well, that sounds like something I could be good at.
Okay, what could the trained horse do?
I'm going to read an article now that will tell you, I think. No one elaborated that much on it.
I'll hold my horses.
The Dundee Courier article that I referenced earlier from the 24th of October, 1882, said, happening to read a newspaper account of a horse... Did you say you'll hold your horses?
I can't believe how long that took you.
Jesus
Christ.
I was
still, like, waiting for my laughter.
This has been yesterday's chip paper, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for tuning in. Good God. Okay. It says, happening to read a newspaper account of a horse which has been taught strange tricks and was exhibited at the fair of St. Germain's, or Germain, a light broke in upon him, and a new and brilliant path seemed to open. Might he not turn animal trainer for his own amusement, at least, if not for show and profit? If the experiment was successful, so ran his eager thoughts, was there not a chance of its repaying him well, bringing him to wealth? The teaching of quadrupeds and birds to perform antics in public was an old art, and the only originality which we can claim for our townsman, meaning him, is that being indebted to no one for lessons or hints, he conceived and carried out a system of his own which produced the most astonishing results. Animal training. He wants to do it. He's heard about this magic horse. And it turns out he's really, really good at it.
Oh, well, that's lucky, because I heard about animal training and tried it, and I wasn't that good at it.
What were you trying to train animals to do?
Lift really heavy weights. And then I was going to pin them against boxes.
So were you... is this when you worked in a silver mine in Tasmania?
That was the one. So we had wallabies in the field across the road from our house.
Yeah, I was a guard at a wallaby gulag.
Those things will kill you, turns out.
Oh, man. I've seen a kangaroo, a picture of a kangaroo tensed. Those things are jacked. They're hench.
Just wait till it dehydrates. Put it on a full protein diet.
Yeah, man. Kangaroo HGH. Anyway... he's really good at it. He's so good that his pig's legacy has outlasted his, which is testament to how good an animal trainer is, I think.
His hench pig.
The pig wasn't hench.
Ah, shame.
Pig was pretty chubby, actually.
My pig would have beat his pig.
We're going to go for the pig. We're going to do more on the pig later, because you don't just start with a pig. You start with a horse and a dog is how you start.
Right.
And this episode took me down a lot of rabbit holes, and there was a famous horse in the 16th century called Marocco. And according to reports, Marocco was shown in Scotland in the 1590s, and the locals thought that the horse was a demon and the trainer was a sorcerer.
Ah, yes.
He had to be like, no, look, it's just this thing I do with my hands. Now, that definitely did happen in Paris. It might have happened in Scotland. It definitely did in Paris. One newspaper said it happened in Scotland, but I couldn't find anything to corroborate that, but it definitely happened in Paris.
Everything before 1994.
Exactly. So no, everybody reports what he does with the horse or the dog, but other than the fact that whatever it was very successful, and this encouraged him to go out and buy two monkeys. Okay. So now he's got a horse, a dog, and two monkeys. I don't even know where you buy monkeys, but he's got a horse, a dog, and two monkeys. One of the monkeys he trains to dance and tumble on a tightrope, and that was a quote from a newspaper article. And the other monkey to hold a candle with one hand and operate a barrel organ with another.
Right.
So, I mean, that... I'm going to say it right now. I don't think this guy was kind to animals, but that sounds pretty awesome.
Can I say something really bad? I don't think I would find that very impressive.
Really?
When you're saying that the other guy, his horse is a demon and he's a sorcerer. Okay.
In the 1590s?
Yeah, that guy sounds kind of better. Gonna say.
Oh, no, true. Don't you shit on my biscuit.
I'm just playing devil's advocate here.
Yeah, I mean, Morocco was 150 years before this.
Fair.
If you blew your nose with a handkerchief in 1590, people thought you were a witch.
True.
That's just how it works. Anyway, so Nowhere Ready reports what he does with the dog or the horse. Very successful. And he goes out and he buys two monkeys and then he has this act. And they would also, from a later report about another animal, I think these monkeys were dressed up.
As what? Horses?
I think they had hats and waistcoats. Okay, so yeah. No, I think they were dressed like tiny little elevator operators.
Oh, that's kind of cute.
Yeah, and they would raise their glasses to people, and they would apparently tumble around on the horse's back, and one of them did a dance routine with the dog.
Okay, I'm in.
But this is just a hobby at this point. He's the most patient man. I can't imagine training one animal to lift a candle, let alone a dog, a horse, and two monkeys. And then it goes even crazier because he loves showing it off to people. He's like, oh, come around to my house and watch this bonkers animal cruelty. Which is what this is. So people come around and then he's got the monkeys, he's got the dog, he's got the horse, and then he adds three cats.
Okay.
Now, you training a cat.
That's difficult. They're just like, piss off.
I can't even make a cat like me. So he buys these three cats. And this is, for Samuel, his life will have two peaks and then end horribly. And this is peak one. He gets his three cats. He's doing all right. He's got money. I don't know. His wife isn't really mentioned much in this story because none of the newspapers reported on her. One of them was even like, where's his wife? But he was a pretty solidly wealthy guy already. He's independently wealthy. He's got this hobby of making animals do weird people shit. But it's the cats. It's the cats that takes it up to the next level. Because Violet, do you know what his plans were for the cats?
What were the plans for the cats, Jim?
A cat opera.
No, that
a fucking cat opera.
That's just like my garden at night. It's not Pretty Men. What songs did they do?
If Sam Bissett was doing the choreography and what do you need for an opera? Songwriting? If he was doing all that, your garden would be a joy each
Okay.
evening. So yeah, cat opera. And the Dundee Courier says, a hard task, surely. Think of a man in his senses fancying that he could control and harmonise a caterwauling. The idea seems absurd. But seriously, Bissett was quite in his senses and went about his work with consummate tact and patience, shrinking before no difficulty, because confident that he would accomplish his design with the young British tigers, despite their inherent madcap sportiness and all their scratching and biting. Which is just a wonderful paragraph.
I think a similar thing was written about Andrew Lloyd Webber.
In his famous failed first round of Cats when it was just cats.
So he tried and then he was like, maybe I need humans.
I need people in cat costumes. Yeah, I'm going to go with that. I have to throw a lot of cats in a lake now.
Oh, no. Don't worry, guys, just keep going. I thought I would have a whole cast for an opera. It didn't work out.
I'm here drowning cats. I didn't want it to go this way. Anyway, he gets a dulcimer.
He gets a what?
It's like a stringed instrument. A dulcimer.
Okay.
And yeah. The cats can play the dulcimer.
What? No. How can a cat play an instrument?
No bullshit. They all three of them at the same time on the same dulcimer, right?
I thought you were going to say that it was going to be, his name's Sam, right? Samuel?
Sam Bissett.
I thought he was going to be doing like, you know how they do like the tuning fork at the beginning of a performance so everyone can like get their key? So he was going to be doing that with the cats. But this is just even more mad than that.
He is a showman, so I think there probably was an element of that going on, to be honest. I think he probably did get out there and conduct the cats. Because all of this is done with hand movements and, you know, responses to the things that the human does, I imagine he did conduct.
Mm.
I did a little conductor hand then. I don't know if you saw that.
I didn't. Your video's not on.
Jim Shaughnessy, podcast conductor.
I'm going to have to narrate your movements for everyone this time.
Okay. So not only do they learn to play a dulcimer, they also harmonize.
Yes! Jim, I can't harmonize.
No, I can't.
I have tried.
I'm a human male. I'm an adult human. These are cats. It's literally a phrase, like saying something is like herding cats.
Yeah.
It's just difficult because they're so hard to train. And he spends all day, every day with his cats.
How on earth does he do that?
I don't know.
There must be some sort of like near-death experiences involved every time he wants them to sing a strain. Like,
yeah, I don't know if he went through one set of cats. Let's put it that way.
Oh no! Oh no! oh, that guy's another one. Just have to go find another.
He would put like music box in front of them on little stands, little cat stands.
Oh yeah, the cats read music, Jim.
If cats could speak, the only thing they would say was "fuck you."
But they'd sing
and
this, it.
They're singing and they're sitting still and they're reading sheet music and they're playing an instrument. I can't play instruments. And the cat's opera.
My parents listened to me trying to play violin for 8 years. I don't know how long this cat experiment went on for, but it does not sound good. I do not care how good he is as a trainer.
I swear to God, this was like a year. He wasn't working.
That just doesn't sound good.
He spent, yeah, can you even imagine how frustrating this was? So anyway, so he's got three cats singing in harmony, playing a string instrument.
What are the rest of the animals doing at this point? Like, oh, fuck you, man. Playing cards in the spare room.
The horse is probably doing advanced trigonometry or something, or...
Yeah.
maybe the dog had taken up a career in ice cream making or something.
Smoking cigars and just... Listening from the next room, gambling.
You've got to have a horse cigar. But during this whole time, his affairs are just totally being left. He's living on his wife's money.
Uh-huh.
There was some speculation in the newspapers that she wasn't happy about this because basically she's funding her husband training cats to sing.
In the next room. Yeah. I wouldn't be happy about that either.
But can you please? You were good at brokering. Neither of us have a job. Oh my God, I can't even leave the house because everyone knows who I am and they're like, is your husband really just training cats?
I can't invite anyone round.
No.
Would you like a meow?
Yeah, oh, I mean, in fairness, let's not be harsh on these cats. These cats are harmonizing. These cats sound good.
Yeah, good with big inverted commas around that.
They're doing their best. But...
So, I'm not digging anyone for trying, but no, does not sound good.
So he's just sitting around all day training cats, okay, which is the hardest thing in the world to do. And people hear about this incredible feat. So the house is busy all the time with people who want to see the singing cats, because they're fucking singing cats. Of course you want to see singing cats. And then another crazy person enters the story.
Because we needed more of those.
Someone says you should do this as a stage show.
That was his wife.
Yeah.
Hey, Sam, you know what you should do? You should take them out of the house.
Get out 4 nights a week. this guy, it was called Mr. Pinchbeck. He was a watchmaker and he had great... I'll read this article out from the Dundee Courier.
Okay.
So this is the guy who proposed that Samuel should do a show. The showman was a popular character in his way, Mr. Pinchbeck by name, lately watchmaker in London, who had great skill in the construction of automaton figures and had been exhibiting them in what he called the Great Theatre of the Muses. In 1741, he, in conjunction with a partner named Fawkes, brought out a model of the true and exact Siege of Cartagena, an enterprise in which the British land and sea forces had failed in the preceding year. Mr. Pinchbeck, after visiting Mr. Bissett's experts, highly commended what he saw and advised performances at the Haymarket Theatre, predicting that the town would be taken by storm. Furthermore, he offered to join in the adventure on condition of sharing the profits. Bissett, unacquainted to the management of such matters, was very glad to secure the cooperation of a man of such experience as Mr. Pinchbeck and gladly closed at once with the proposal. This guy, Pinchbeck, I looked at him. He would create mechanical recreations in like almost, well, not full size because you can't do full size, of battles and things.
That sounds actually really, that's really cool.
It's pretty great. And I looked around about him and he was like very well esteemed in this.
I wonder if any of them survived. I guess this is a long time ago now, isn't it? Still 1700s.
This is like 260 years ago.
Yeah, the odds are down now.
Yeah, pretty down. The Haymarket Theatre, London... It's called Cat's Opera. And Pinchbeck, after proposing it and helping with some of the arrangements, backed out of it.
Sorry to interject again. I say interject, some might say interrupt. But do you think there's a court case here between us and the estate of this Samuel fellow and Andrew Lloyd Webber?
I mean, I think we'd carefully tread the lines of being sued by the estate of somebody every episode, really.
Might as well give it a shot.
Yeah, I don't think... I'm being kind about Sam Bissett.
I'm writing it down.
Yeah.
It's a maybe.
So the Haymarket Theatre in London, and the show's called Cat's Opera, Pinchback backed out, because he didn't see it making money. And Samuel's new to the game, but after this Pinchback guy backs out, he just has to go ahead because he believes in his Cat's Opera. Which I've never said before.
I believe
before
in you guys.
I believe in my Cat's Opera.
Don't worry, guys, we won't quit.
So he goes ahead with the show, and it is a smash hit.
Of course. I would go.
He goes out on stage with his dog and his horse and his monkeys and his cats. And according to the Dundee Courier...
The superfluous other animals.
Yeah. Yeah, the support band. Everything passed off triumphantly. The Cat's Opera electrified the audience and the applause was deafening. Next morning, all London was ringing with the name of the Perth Shoemaker. The performance ran for several nights and Bissett found himself with £1,000 clear in his pocket, which I checked, that's about 140 grand.
Jesus Christ.
According to a website called measuringworth.com.
Sounds legit to me.
It's also like... It's one algorithm away from telling me I don't have any. Do you know what I mean? Like you just type in your own name and you're like, oh, man.
Oh, shit.
So this is a crest of a wave for Bissett. He's come out with his 140 grand up. He's really huge
not
hit.
Bad for a week of training cats. A week? A year. I'm sorry. Year. I didn't mean a week.
It's not bad wages for a year to train cats. But Jesus wept. I would rather just have my job. So this is... He decides that animal training is the way that he can make it big in the world. Because obviously he's had a cat opera.
Makes
I've
sense.
I've never had a cat opera.
I have, but it was really unsuccessful.
I just had a cat. we just didn't get on.
I was trying to make it harmonize and it all fell apart.
I was just trying to make it come inside. I couldn't. So then he goes on to like this crazy tear of animal training. First, I think this is the order it goes in. He gets a hare, and he teaches the hare to play a drum. Now, I'm not being funny. That seems like a lot easier than the cat thing.
Yeah.
Whatever. And then he got some birds. He got some goldfinches, some sparrows, and some canaries. And he got them flying around, spelling people's names. People would say their name, and the birds would fly into the shape of the fucking...
I have an idea. Why didn't he get them to sing? Because that would sound a lot better than a cat.
I don't think their lungs are large enough to hold enough air to put out a... I don't want to shoot your ideas down. Every idea you've ever had on the show has been terrible.
I'll just put it down as another maybe.
Okay. So then it gets the birds, they're flying around, and the people would just say their name, and then the birds would fly around and spell words. That's a real thing that people say that he did, and he told them how to tell the time.
That's pretty good.
I don't think we even had minutes in the 1780s. I think it was like, oh yeah, the sun is in the third quadrant or whatever. So now we've got a dog, a horse, two monkeys, three cats, a hare, loads of birds. So that's enough, right? He's done.
Mm-hmm. No, he's not.
Six turkey cocks were added.
Oh,
and
of course.
He taught them how to do a choreographed dance, which he didn't. Because he admitted later that this was via a thing called the Eastern Method, which meant he just heated the floor up.
Oh, that's cheating. Come on.
It's just horrible for the birds. Also, can you imagine being his neighbour and looking out the window and being like, Valerie, look. Six turkeys.
Where? How big is his house?
I don't know.
So it's like the guy who had the menagerie of wild Canadian animals in his house. I just don't... Yeah,
this guy lives in London.
Space. Exactly. Like...
In my 10 years in London, I had like one garden.
I still don't have a garden. I haven't achieved that status yet. I'm like I've got a basket for washing, and I don't have anywhere to keep all of these animals, Jim. I just don't believe it.
I think if you want it enough, the horse would be difficult.
I live on the fourth floor. It's a walk up. Actually, that can make it a lot easier for me.
Not for the horse.
Carry on.
Okay. Nothing achieves the fame of the cat opera, though. He doesn't recreate those dizzying highs. He's just a guy with a house full of animal shit.
He's just a guy with a bunch of animals.
In a world. But how Do you think the animals got jealous, the ones that weren't being trained at that minute? Because he's just adding more and more.
I was going to say, how did one of them not end up eating the other?
Oh, like, they did. A cat ate a bird.
Yeah, for sure.
He only named one of these animals. He doesn't give a shit about them. Oh, also, he trained a turtle how to fetch things like a dog.
That's the least effective skill for a turtle to have. I'm sorry.
He would paint the floor with chalk and he would blacken the turtle's feet and the turtle would spell things out.
But again, that's probably just heating the floor again, isn't it?
Imagine, Violet, how patient you have to be to train a turtle. It goes sloth, then turtle.
Then
those are the seagull.
Yeah.
The right. Cats of the sky.
No, the rats of the sky.
6 months. 6 months to achieve. He trained a turtle. But anyway, none of this is getting back to the success of the cat opera. And he's not earning any money because he's using every waking moment to train a turtle to act like a dog.
He's got dogs for that, man.
Yeah, no, exactly. And like, also, imagine going and watching it and being like, yeah, this is great, but it's been 25 minutes and he's not even at the ball yet.
So, it's halfway through spilling my name. I was going to get the last train, but do you think that's feasible in this time? Or
Is the store still selling beer? Because I'm going to get some on the way home and it's gone very dark. His star begins to fade at this point and there are competitors popping up, meaning that it's harder for him to make money because no one gives a shit about his particular brand of animal cruelty. One of the articles, the Dundee Courier again, one of the competitors was opened under the name Mrs. Midnight's Animal Comedians, which...
Okay, yeah, I would I'm go and it. See that. 100%. 100%. More than singing.
I want to see the animals do actual bits. I want to see the animals be like, so why don't they just make the whole plane out of the black box material? Oh, that's what I want.
That's what they want to say, but what you actually hear is just, meow.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh man, this guy's crushing. Comprising a considerable number of performing dogs and monkeys, they went through many amusing antics and had a grand ballet dance in which they appeared as ladies and gentlemen, dressed in the costumes of the day with powdered hair, hoops, wigs, cocked hats, and all the other paraphernalia of the reigning fashions. But their principal performance was what proved their greatest attraction, was the siege of a fortified town, monkeys forming the garrison, and dogs the assailants, who gallantly stormed the ramparts and planted their flag upon them.
Fucking hell.
This is the most awesome thing I've ever heard.
This is the beginning of Animal Farm. Get these animals much more intelligent and you've got a siege on your hands.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, it absolutely is. The French Revolution hadn't happened yet.
It was actually started by a monkey.
Yeah, Robespierre was a pig.
Not many people know that, but you can take that on us.
It may also be noted that among the rivals who disputed the palm with Bissett was one of a singular character who came to London in August 1766. This was an Englishman named Wildman, belonging to Plymouth, who had made famous for his command over bees, and bees is in italics in an 1880s newspaper.
Yes.
A swarm of those busy insects followed him about and settled on his face, beard, and hands without stinging him, and in fact were obedient to his every order. This is the Wild West for animal shows, and I love it.
What did they do?
The bees.
What did he command them to do? It's quite easy to get bees to swarm you, but getting them to obey anything else is probably another matter.
It works heavily with balsa wood. made little boats.
Okay, makes sense.
Yeah. I also couldn't find anything about any of these people, so they may well have existed. So all of this contributed to a lack of demand for his shows, and eventually he gets so disheartened that he just sold a lot of his animals and he went on tour with the rest of them.
Ooh, me. I'll have one. I'll have the hare that can drum.
That would be the most annoying one.
No, it would be the best one. You just have to pad everything in your house.
Have you ever seen a hare?
Yes.
They're like massive.
Yeah, they're like dogs, but they're actually rabbits. That's why they're so great.
Look,
don't believe me. Come around to mine. I've got a hare in my washing basket.
Yet another terrible business idea of Ireland.
It's not a business. That's just a pleasure.
I don't know. I also don't know where his wife is in the story. She just stops getting mentioned.
Sat on by the hair.
1775, he goes and tours Ireland. And he gets to Belfast, and that's where his brothers live. And I think his brothers were watchmakers, and they were doing quite well for themselves. And they were like, Sam, you're an embarrassment to everything the Bissett family believes in. He buys a pub with the money that he's got from the tour. He sells his menagerie.
Should have kept the cats to entertain.
Do you know animals do die? Animals don't last forever.
Don't listen to him, Fluffy. It's fine.
Also, Sam's body count. Yikes. But he...
sizzled on the hot floor.
Buys this quiet pub to live out the rest of his days. The problem is, though, Violet, and you and I both know this, but maybe people listening don't. You can't just give up training animals to wear jackets and play musical instruments.
You can't. It's in your blood.
You can't.
You're born with it.
It's in your blood. My notes say it's in your blood.
I've tried. I have tried. Just didn't work.
The pub isn't going that well. The pub doesn't go well. So he starts shoemaking again. But it's just not. It's just not fulfilling him.
Okay.
So he gets a cat and a dog. It's kind of like the methadone of animal training addiction.
Mm.
And he trains them to do things. And it isn't enough for him. At some point, he tries training a goldfish.
Okay.
It doesn't work.
That's weird. They've got a famously good memory.
Yeah. They're stupid. They're idiots. And I don't know why he thought that. I don't know why he thought that would work, but it didn't. And this is when he has his eureka moment that will catapult him back to stardom. Some guy in a pub was talking to, or in the pub, I guess, the one he owns, talking to him about training animals and says that the most difficult one to train would be a pig.
I would beg to differ, but some of my best eureka moments have come from men in pubs.
I would beg to differ because I would say it's like probably a shark.
Yeah, I mean, there's always the danger of death there. I'd say exactly. Kangaroos were pretty high up on the list too. Like the proper full-size ones that are like 7 foot tall.
Yeah. In fact, you know what else? A starfish.
Plankton.
Plankton.
Plankton, almost impossible. Pretty difficult.
I mean, the fucking goldfish didn't work. So the guy could have just been like, yeah, you really flubbed that goldfish move. So Sam's like, no, I'm the guy who can train a pig. And this is where Toby comes in. There is a Wikipedia page called Learned Pigs.
Of course there is.
And Toby is listed as the original pig.
Don't you love what's on Wikipedia compared to yes. the vastness of what isn't? What made the cut?
There's room for everyone. So this is where Sam Bissett gets mentioned, but Toby is the original pig on the Learned Pigs Wikipedia page. His pig actually is more famous than him.
That's great.
To the point where I know how much he paid for the pig.
How much did he pay for the pig?
He paid 3 shillings at a market in Belfast, and he bought a black piglet. Then he would work all day as a shoemaker, and the piglet would sit under his chair, and then he would train the piglet the rest of the time. I found a quote from somebody, a poet called Robert Sotheby or Southby. He told me he never saw the keeper beat him, but that if he did not perform his lessons well, he used to threaten to take off his red waistcoat, for the pig was proud of his dress.
No!
Yeah.
That's so adorable and also ridiculous.
This is so stupid. Pigs grow so quickly as well. But he starts training the pig, because he can train anything except for goldfish. And he trains Toby for 6 months and nothing happens, and the articles are like, he's middle-aged, he's getting older, things aren't going well for him, he's had years of resentment and rejection. But then after 16 months, Toby's trained.
Wow, that's quite quick.
Yeah, he can do all sorts of stuff.
What can he do?
I'm going to tell you. In 1783, he sells his pub and goes back to doing what he loves, which is train animals to do people shit. Takes Toby the pig down to Dublin. They do shows together. The Armagh Guardian from the 9th of June 1871 says, he brought the bearded pig into London, procured the leave of the Lord Mayor for his exhibition, and carried the city by storm. It was trained to be as docile and obedient as a spaniel, and was taught to spell names, cast up accounts, tell exactly their hours, minutes, and seconds, to kneel, and to make his obeisance to the company, and do various other feats.
Cast up accounts.
I don't know what that means.
Is that accounting?
I'm hoping it's not accounting.
If not, I need this guy. I'll trade him for a massive hair.
You have got that. I'll just lying around now. So he is the original learned pig. No one had ever done this before. He can do everything the birds could do. He could do more. He could pick up married
except
people
fly.
In a room. He couldn't fly. That's a good point. Sorry. He could spell things. He could tell the time. There was a huge debate over whether he was actually doing this or whether he was just responding to signals, which I would say, yes, he's responding to signals. Because he's a fucking pig.
I mean, people have a lot of faith in this guy, but...
Yeah. it's like the movie Big. It's like as if Tom Hanks had become a pig and was like doing stuff. That's what these people think is actually happening. So they do, I think, 3 days in Dublin. It's a huge success. Samuel's planning trips to England to show Toby. He had, so this is coming to the end of the story. He had the permission of the mayor and the magistrates to do the show, But then one night the weather is bad, so they move to another venue. And this is bad news because he doesn't have a license to exhibit in this venue.
Oh, see, I thought you were going to say, like, because he'd set up his whole stage with all the ways he managed to make Pig do shit.
He never gets found out.
Okay, that's pretty good.
He moves to another venue where he doesn't have permission to perform. And this guy, this official, comes into the venue and loses his shit. He destroys everything on stage. He draws a sword. Yeah.
What?
Draws a sword and goes to kill the pig.
Oh, no.
Samuel and the crowd manage to stop him killing the pig, but he's run out of Dublin on the rails. He can't perform there. And the shock of that, how brutal it was, really deeply affected Samuel. So from the Armagh Guardian again, 9th of June, 1871. Poor Bissett pleaded hard for the chief magistrate's leave, but he was threatened that if he offended any more with his daring performances, he would be dragged to prison. Only if it was a little too late in the era, it was probable that poor Bissett would have suffered at the stake for witchcraft, which is,
wow.
It's probably only 100 years off that, 200 years off that. After the breakup of Bissett's hopes, his anguish of mind produced an illness from which he never effectually recovered, and he died in a few days afterwards of a broken heart in Chester on his way to London.
That's really heartbreaking.
Yeah.
That's actually really sad.
It's a really sad end to the story.
What happened to the pig?
It got sold to a guy named Nicholson, and it died a couple of years later, 2 or 3 years later. And the event was described as the end of the wonderful pig, which, the end of the wonderful pig, come on.
Oh.
You can't put that in things. That's
Why
just
are you
funny.
Doing this to me?
So that's the story of Samuel Bissett and Toby the Wonder Pig.
Oh, that was... Too soon, man.
Pretty wild, though, right? It's a pretty wild story.
They could have done amazing things. I picture these guys starring in their own movie, like a buddy road trip film.
Like Every Which Way But Loose, but with a pig.
Yeah, exactly. No, I'm thinking more like Easy Rider. They're going to go in style. Yeah. Get a bandana on.
You're like Dennis Hopper with a pig.
Yes. Like, great. Dennis Hopper will star in anything these days. It's fine.
We need to have an off mic conversation about your ideas sometimes.
It's just another maybe.
Okay, put it on the list of maybes. We'll talk about it later. So that's the end of my story. That's Samuel Bissett and Toby and the cats and the monkeys and the turtle and the pig and the horse and the dogs.
A rip-roaring ride.
It really was. Researching this one was a lot of fun.
There was a man with a sword. Guy with his sword tried to kill a pig.
Tried to kill the pig.
Like, that's the biggest overreaction I've ever heard.
Yeah. And the newspapers are like, what the fuck is this guy doing?
He was on something. He wasn't okay.
He doesn't have the right to do this at all. And also, there are photos of Toby all over the place.
Ooh.
So I will put one on social media. None of Samuel I could find.
That's a shame.
His pig was more famous than he was. This wasn't an exaggeration.
That's crazy.
Also, sorry, I just have one of the articles open here from the Armagh Guardian on the 9th of June, 1871. The teaching of this unruly animal almost wearied out Bissett's patience, and he was giving up on the task in despair when he brought a new mode of taming the young boar. After 16 months of unwearied perseverance, he at last was rewarded by instilling a little reason into the pig's unreasoning cranium, thus proving that pigs can not only see the wind by common belief, but they can be made useful in raising the wind. Pigs are like the third or fourth most intelligent animal on Earth.
That's really funny.
It's like us, dolphins, orcas, pigs, or something like that. Anyway, what we also like to do is we like to look at letters and poems from old newspapers because they offer a window into the past.
Yes. And in this case, this is exactly what this poem is doing that I found in the Derry Journal on the 13th of January, 1908. And in 1908, this poem is called The Old Fashioned Man.
The Old Fashioned Man.
And it goes... The old-fashioned man would come in from his work at the close of a busy day, and the old-fashioned wife greeted him with a kiss in the old-fashioned lovable way. Then he sat down to supper and poured out his tea in the saucer and gustily blew, his breath o'er the beverage to cool it that way, a method that now wouldn't do. Oh, the old-fashioned man, I can see him today, with his saucer of tea held in air. On the table his elbows are resting once more, and the old-fashioned wife sitting there. There is love in her eyes as she gazes at him, and love light once more I can see. And the old-fashioned man sends a smile to his wife o'er the brink of his saucer of tea. He'd bubble the tea with his breath as he'd blow, and gurgle it down as he drank, And yet he was happier, far I declare, than the people of station and rank. For the old-fashioned wife was devoted and true, and the old-fashioned man, I will say, who drank steaming tea from a saucer at night, also loved in the old-fashioned way. It may be I'm wrong, but I feel that I'm right, now these old-fashioned folks are at rest, and their daisies bloom over their couches of earth, that the old-fashioned ways were the best. Oh, I wish that this old-fashioned man was still here, with his old-fashioned wife as of yore. Oh, I wish they would come from the Valley of Death and drink from their sources once more.
I grew up in the 80s and 90s in Manchester.
Mm-hmm.
My grandfather used to drink his tea from a saucer.
Were you born pre-1908?
Yes, the 1880s. And 1880s. In fact, drinking tea from a saucer was so commonplace when I grew up that in my primary school, we learned it was part of our physics lessons.
What? How?
Because it increases the surface area of the tea and cools it faster.
Oh, I see.
So that's how we were taught about surface area, with tea and a saucer.
I can't remember what we were taught with.
Racism.
Racism. You got to cool it down first.
All right, well, that's great. I like that a lot.
And then my letter comes from the Shetland Times, 16th of December, 1882. It has the headline, Grouse Experiment in Shetland.
Right.
Dear Sir, last week I slipped some live grouse in the Cunningsborough Hills. Since then, none of my people have seen the birds. With this severe weather, the birds may have wandered to any part of Shetland. Wherever they are, on public grounds, I trust no sportsman will take a shot at them, and so spoil my experiment. And personally, I will feel very much obliged if any person seeing these grouse will send me a postcard saying where and when they have been seen. Yours truly, John Brooke.
By the time that postcard arrives, that bird will have moved, John.
Sorry. Almost certainly.
Almost certainly. Unless it's dead.
I was going to say also, dead. Severe weather, he says.
Has he put little hats on them?
Oh, yeah. This is what I was going to say. How would people tell his grouse from the regular grouse in Shetland?
That's John's grouse.
Oh, it's got the little hat on. Unless he's like trained them to sing.
Yeah, he trained them to speak.
They're the ones doing the harmonies on the hill.
He's trained them to say, morning.
Please send morning,
John's grouse.
To John.
John's grouse. Hi, how are you? Morning. Just grousing. Yeah, just grousing around. Morning. That's fun.
But that's everything that I've got for this week.
That's everything that I've also got. So thank you for joining us on this journey through the crazy life of Samuel Bissett.
Thank you, everyone.
If you want to find out more about Samuel Bissett, just Google Pigman. I'll put a photo of Toby up on social media when we upload this episode.
At Paper Podcast on Facebook and Twitter.
Yes, that's where you can find us. And we also really appreciate it if you could pop us a little review on iTunes. It helps more than you could possibly know. And that's Andy condescending, because you might know exactly how much it helps, and I don't.
Shut up, Jim.
Yeah, please do.
Yes, it does really help, though. And all of the archives and other resources that we use for the making of these podcasts can be found in the episode descriptions.
We will be back in a couple of weeks with another full-length episode. Playing us out is Al Jolson and Sophie Tucker with the International Rag, with thanks to the Free Music Archive.
Thank you, Free Music Archive. We'll be back in a couple of weeks.
Bye.
The International Rag.